What's up, New Era Suns fans? I'm really excited to join you on as we start our new Prospect Report series. So this will be hosted by myself, Brennan. I have my co-host joining me today, Nick, and we're joined by a very special guest in Todd Lushko. We're really excited to bring on and talk to you. So let's welcome him in now.
How's it going, Todd?
Good, gentlemen. You can hear me, can you?
Yeah, works well. Works perfectly. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Excited to go on the show with you guys. A couple of young, enthusiastic hockey brains right now. So this is awesome. I'm hoping to learn something from you guys today.
Oh, I don't know what we have in terms of learning from you, but we'll see. Did you have a chance to watch the Germany game today?
Yes, it was. I was extremely proud of how well those guys played. Not only today, but the entire tournament. I mean. Everything that was all the obstacles and things that were in their way. I mean, with the quarantine, them not being able to practice at all before the tournament starts, playing shorthanded for the first two games and then getting some recruits back at the very end. I'll tell you what, that game today against Russia was outstanding. And the guys in Germany and the whole German program can hold their heads high with what they accomplished, because they had an outstanding tournament and it was awesome. For German hockey today.
Yeah, no, definitely so much to be proud of. Just to be able to even make it to that game. But yeah, just so much adversity that they face. So yeah, you gotta be rooting for guys like that. I hope that they're proud of their accomplishments, and to come within one goal, that was phenomenal. That was fun to watch.
Well, I know, and the goal they had, like our little buddy Florian Elias that plays.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's a tip away from hits a crossbar, and then. He's alone in front. I mean, it was a break. We'll talk about him, I'm sure, later, but it was a breakout tournament for him as well.
He was absolutely buzzing the whole tournament. But yeah, today is just, and he was doing great on the faceoffs as well, I heard.
Well, I know that he took a number of faceoffs. I would have liked to have seen exactly what the percentage was, because I think he wasn't like knocking it off the charts in terms of winning them, but he was definitely the go-to guy for them tonight.
But he was there. Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, we'll get started with our questions that we have for you here. So maybe just a bit of background about you, Todd. So so you had a pretty great playing career as well. So just starting it off, when I'm brushing up on my background research on you, I came across the fact that you won a silver medal with Canada in the 1994 Olympics, which is pretty fitting just after today and with the World Juniors and everything going on to bring up. So I guess my question for you is, what was it like to represent Canada on the Olympic stage? And what would you consider this one of the highlights of your career?
Like, first of all, thank God for the internet, right? Because you guys probably weren't even born when I was playing in that tournament, for God's sakes. But yeah, it was quite some time ago, and but it was outstanding. I mean, yeah, back in 1994, we were kind of a team that no one was really sure what we were going to do in that tournament, and we ended up, you know, coming out of it pretty good. I mean, a shootout. Goal or a miss away from walking away with a gold medal in the Olympics in 94, which was awesome, because it would have been the first time, you know, before Canada ended up winning the Olympics, you know, years later, it would have been the first gold medal in 52 years since we'd won it. And the irony of it was actually in Oslo, Norway, the last time they won it. So when we were getting ready for that game, we're like, well, this is kind of fitting. Is this destiny? We're going to win it in Norway 52 years later, but it didn't happen. But yeah, an outstanding tournament. Got to play with some Hall of Famers. Paul Kariya was on our team. He was a young 18-year-old at the time. And
wow.
See him flourish into what he ended up doing into becoming a Hockey Hall of Famer. And likes like Adrian Acoine. And, you know, I could go down the whole list of guys. But we had some outstanding players on that team. But, yeah, it was a great experience to play in that tournament. And put the jersey over your head and have that Canadian crest on your chest feels pretty good.
So how did it work back in 94? So in terms of like you stayed with the team for quite a while for tryouts and things like that, right? Like, how long were you with the team before the Olympics started?
Yeah, it was 94 was kind of the last year where the Canadian, we had a Canadian national team. Basically, it was based out of Calgary and it ran for decades long. And our year was kind of that 94 was the last year that it kind of ended. And what we did is we would tour around Canada with their team, and it was kind of like for the 2 years that I was with him, it was kind of like an ongoing trial, right? Like as you would go to different cities around Canada, we would go to international tournaments overseas. And, you know, there'd always be a sprinkle of guys. We would grab a guy from Europe to play with us or two guys. Then we would do a tour in Canada where we would hit, you know, all the small little towns, even all the way up to Whitehorse, Mekon, and Baie-Comeau, and Newfoundland. Like, we'd go all over the place and we'd play these games. And the big payoff for us at the end of the year would be the world championships that this team would go and we'd add a couple guys. And then the ultimate payoff was playing the 2 years and then being selected to stay on the team with Team Canada for the Olympics. So that's kind of what happened to me. I played 2 years with those guys, traveled all over the place, got to see the world. And then at the end of the day, got to play in the Olympics, which was pretty cool.
It kind of reminds me of like the Harlem Globetrotters, except hockey edition and just next level up. So that's super exciting.
Believe me, there were times in some of the tournaments that we went to in Russia and Sweden that we felt like we were the Washington Generals. Don't get me wrong. Amazing. You guys know who the Washington Generals are, don't you?
No, too young for that.
Come on, I can't. Listen, the Washington Generals was the best basketball team that the Harlem Globetrotters played every game. So,
I didn't realize that they just had one beating opponent. I wasn't aware of that, but
this episode might.
Fun fact is the Washington Generals ended up winning. They did actually win one game while they played them during that time.
Wow.
Good for them.
That was kind of my joke where we felt like those guys a couple of times against some of the Russian teams that were outstanding. So anyway.
So this episode might turn into a trivia episode by the looks of it. But I don't really mind, but you know, just touching on your past a little bit. I know, you know, we did some research, obviously, but you grew up in Guelph, Ontario. So, you know, I just want to ask, you know, how is that like transitioning to not only playing pro hockey in Europe, but also rooting your life to move there?
Well, I was pretty lucky because, like I said, when I was a young kid, I moved all over the place. I played in Regina, Saskatchewan for a bunch of years. My dad, you know, had a job where we had to be transferred all over Canada. And I ended up, you know, kind of settling down here in Guelph in my high school years. And this is kind of where I played a lot of my, my junior B hockey, my midget hockey, and had a chance to actually play in Notre Dame in Saskatchewan for a year as well with Brad Brindamore and guys like that. But then ended up coming back to Guelph, and I was privileged enough to get drafted by my own junior team here in Guelph. It was called the Guelph Platers at the time. It's gone through a few names since then, but was able to do that. And then, you know, from there, ended up going and getting drafted by Washington and played my pro career. But then when I did move over to Europe, it was outstanding. I mean, the first time you go over to Europe, though, to live and to play, it's a culture shock for the first couple months. And you're kind of trying to figure out the language. You're figuring out where you can get English TV, and you're figuring out what the country codes are to dial home and for people to call you. There's a lot of things. I mean, nowadays it's a whole lot easier, but you know, in 1999, 2000, when I went over, we didn't, you know, we had the internet and all that stuff, but it wasn't as advanced as everything is today. So life going over there now is a little bit easier. So it was a bit of a transition, but I'll tell you what, an experience that I would never trade.
Mm-hmm. No kidding. I mean, being so young and, you know, having that experience to go to Europe, I mean, you do learn a lot, you pick up a lot. That's awesome to hear that you got to do that. I know I went to Europe when I was a kid, and that really had a huge impact on me when I came back here to Ottawa. Just everything I took from it really taught me a lot. So I love hearing that. And you know what? That's really cool.
So Todd, how did you find the change? So like growing up playing in Guelph for that many years, and just the way that the hockey culture is here in Guelph and throughout Ontario or Canada. How did you find that change when you went to Germany, where hockey wasn't the dominant sport? What was that adjustment like?
Well, you know, it's at the time, it's not the number one sport, obviously, in Europe. I mean, the big one is soccer and handball and things like that. But you'd be surprised over in Europe back then. I mean, now it's a lot different, even more now. But when you go over, there's pockets of hotbeds. And I was fortunate to play in my first year when I went over, I played in a town called Clone, and our team was called the Clone Hire. So the Clone, that's Sharks in English, but the Clone Sharks. And the arena that we played in there was a 21,000 seat arena, and we filled it every single game.
So, oh, wow.
when you say culture, it's not, you know, it wasn't a national embrace sport so much, but the pockets of where these teams were in the DEL and Clone being one of the bigger ones, it was overwhelming, to be quite honest, because you get into the stadium and it's nonstop singing and dancing and drinking for 60 minutes from the fans. And it didn't matter if you're winning or losing, they just kept singing. Oh. it was absolutely awesome when it came to the environment. And I was actually shocked because I didn't know what to expect. And then when I got over there, I mean, talking about crowds getting you into the mood and getting you ready to play and having you know, the crowd have such a big influence on referees because they're so noisy and cheering and booing, and it was unbelievable. So the change was actually shocking in a good way, because I didn't realize how passionate they really were over there until I went and played.
Amazing. That's a really cool story. Not the answer I was expecting. So I really love to hear that. Mm-hmm. I guess while we are looking back at the glory days still, during the 96-97 series or 96-97 season, you had the pleasure of playing with Jerome McGinley in Calgary for his rookie season. So I guess, like, I'm just curious what it was like to play with a 19-year-old Jerome. And if there were certain aspects of his game that you kind of stopped and were just like, okay, yeah, like this kid's going to be special. This kid's something.
Well, you know, what was pretty cool is before the 96-97 season, I was in Calgary's farm team in St. John, New Brunswick. And so it was the 96-97. So Jerome had actually came out of junior and played with the Calgary Flames for their first or second round playoff round.
Okay.
And Calgary got beat out, and I was down in St. John, and we were in the middle of our cup playoffs, and we had a really good team. Like we got to the semifinals that year. We probably should have got to the finals and won it. And we were missing one piece, and we're like, oh, I hope they send Jerome down to us. Like we're missing that guy, that one piece that could have put us over the edge in that Calder Cup. But obviously he played so well for them, and they didn't want to run the risk of putting him down there. They knew that they didn't need to see him develop anymore. They knew exactly that he was going to be a full-timer in his rookie season the following year. And I had a chance to play with him that year because I actually made the jump that year as well. And yeah, Jerome was, the minute that you saw him, a 19-year-old kid, first of all, the physique on him was that of a 25-year-old guy already. So it wasn't like a kid that was needed to develop into a body. He was already as strong as an ox. The guy was, in his hockey sense, his drive, his passion, he was the first guy on the ice, last guy to leave. And was one of those guys that you'd go into the weight room with, and if you were doing a little bit more bench press than him, he would come in and try to do more than you, and he wouldn't leave until he beat you in that. So that was just like one, he had a passion. It's not just, and it wasn't just like working out and stuff. It was things such as ping pong. Like every NHL team has a ping pong table in the dressing room, and Jerome was set on becoming the champion of the Calgary Flames in the ping pong table. And I mean, I had epic battles with him. We were kind of middle range guys. We were some guys that were way better than us. But he just, by the end of the year, he took himself from the ping pong side of things, took him from, a top 10 guy all the way to a number one or two. Just that was the passion he had to get better in everything that he did. So hockey aside, it was everything else outside of hockey as well. He just always wanted to be a champion, always wanted to be the best at whatever he did. And obviously he did that, and now he's in the Hall of Fame.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's...
Oh, you can go ahead, Brennan.
No, just saying, like, it's incredible. And I think that seems to be a common thing, I think, sometimes with these, like you said, Hall of Fame-esque players, is just their work ethic is a different caliber, right? Like, just to be the best at everything, to have that drive, it's really cool to see and really cool to hear. Kind of might remind me a bit of Tim Stutzle, but...
The thing about Jerome is he never cut corners with everything, right? So when the difference of being a great player, a good player, and being a great player, especially when you have that skill set, is paying attention to all the little details in the game of hockey. And he did that to a T. You never saw him making any mental mistakes on the ice. And if he did do it, he would learn from it. He wouldn't do it again. And then you combine that with the power, the strength, the skill set that this guy had, and the leadership qualities on top of it. Hey, you've got yourself pretty much a perfect hockey player.
Yeah, no, there's a reason he's in the Hall of Fame, right? And I think it's well deserved, and it's really cool to sort of hear how it was to play with him. I mean, I haven't heard a story from someone say that, so definitely a interesting story. But I just want to ask you, how has COVID-19 changed your landscape in terms of scouting? Because I know it's been a weird year this year. A lot of things have changed, but we haven't heard much of, how scouts come about and, work with COVID-19. So has it thrown, a major wrench in your process? And, having so many amateur scouts, North American teams unsure of their seasons, and, how has that been for you?
Well, yeah, it's going to put a wrench in it because there's no hockey. There wasn't a whole lot of games to scout. And the positive or the one good thing from my side of things with my team in Mannheim, my actual title is a director of player development and head of pro scouting. So we didn't have to do I don't have to do a lot of amateur scouting, even though I do watch a lot of junior hockey, is my territory is mostly American Hockey League, NCAA, a little bit of the CIS in Canada, and then obviously the NHL. So the nice thing about this, when this has been, well, there's nothing nice about COVID, nothing nice about hockey not being played right now. It sucks. But the opportunity I had to do was to look at a lot of the North American kids or even the Russian kids that are playing the KHL. The KHL never stopped. The Swedish leagues never really stopped, and even Switzerland. So a lot of video scouting, looking at other players that could possibly come to Mannheim into Germany at some point of their career that I may not take that close of a look at because they are overseas right now and they're playing right now. But, thanks to technology and the internet and everything like that, I'm able to watch a lot of games overseas. And I talk to a lot of other scouts right now, and that's what a lot of guys are doing. They're trying to pick up whatever games they can, whether an NCAA game is being broadcast or any of the leagues over in Europe. So still staying busy. Not as busy as I'd like to be. I like to be on the road because it's video scouting. There's only so much you can do, and you want to be in the ranks and you want to be able to see everything that's going on behind the play. And sometimes watching it on video doesn't show you everything that you need to see about a player. So that would probably be the biggest wrench in not having the leagues going. But I'm excited and looking forward to whatever hockey is going to be played. If it's a shortened season, so be it. But it'll be nice to get back in the ranks, hopefully one day to watch these games live again.
Yeah,
definitely. I think we're all really keen to have some live hockey again, and hopefully it's close in sight. But yeah, I know it's hard. At least with the World Juniors, it's a bit of a teaser. But yeah, it'll be nice to see everything back up and running again. It's interesting that you touched on the video scouting aspect of it, because I was really curious if teams were finding different ways to kind of utilize video scouting now. With the fact that they're kind of forced to do that, but from what I've heard or read or from what I understand is kind of what you touched on is just the importance of like what the video doesn't pick up. Like you don't see that kid that's pissed off that goes back to the bench. Like you don't see there's just certain aspects that you miss that like on video that you really need to be in the rink for. So I guess it's interesting to see that it makes a huge difference, and we still need to go to games as scout or that's kind of.
It's interesting because you have the old school way of scouting, or people that talk about that you see a guy with an older guy that's maybe in his 70s that's been around forever, that's in the stands with his notebook and his pad, and they just let those guys do their things. They like that. They that's the way they do it. But with the technology nowadays, with computers and everything like that, you've got to be up on it and you want to do it. And one thing that video scouting does for me, it validates what I see when I'm at a rink. So if I'm sitting there and I saw something that I liked or something that I didn't like, I'm able to go back on the video and just reaffirm what I saw and validate whether I liked this play or I didn't like that play. So it's a huge part of today and it's here to stay. And I'm glad it is, because there's times that I miss stuff when I'm watching games, and it's nice to go back and catch it on video a second time.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a good tool, right? That's awesome. So I guess probably not much of a surprise to you, but just being an Ottawa Senators based media, we have a couple Tim Stutzel questions for you. So I guess I'll get started on the first one here. So A few different pieces of media have discussed how many people with the like. So there a few things that I saw were talking about how within the German community, people were looking at Tim Stützle and thought from a young age, okay, this kid's going to be special from like a really young age. And he kind of just had that skill group, especially in growing up through like the German ranks where he's dominating night in and night out. He stands out. So I guess my question was for you was when was the first time that you saw Tim play and what were your first impressions of him? And how has he grown since the first time that you saw him?
Well, my first time getting to know Tim and watching him was the first time he played for our U15 team in Mannheim. So he would have been 15 years old at the time. And I remember, getting to the rink and I'm there with our big club, first of all. I'm watching, training camp for Mannheim and, then the junior team, we call it the Junior Adler. We have a program there that goes from it has a U11, U13, U15, U17, and U20. So you've got quite the program in Mannheim. And Tim had joined our U15 program. So I was watching our training camp. And then, between practices of our training camp, we have obviously we have multiple pads at our facility. And I would stop over and I wanted to go take a look at some of these guys. And all of a sudden, I'm watching this U15 team. And I'm like, why is one of our players on our team skating with the 15-year-old right now? Like, that's how it felt. I'm like, what? Is somebody injured with us that is going and skating with these kids? Because the speed and the skill at which he did stuff was heads and tails above anybody of his own age group. It was ridiculous how skilled and how it was, the first thing was it was the speed at which he did things. And the fact that he did things at top speed while controlling the puck was just head turning. And we're sitting there and I'm looking at some of the other German guys that have been around the organization for years that even seen him longer than me. They just looked at me and started smiling and shaking their heads and kind of giggling because they knew that he had shocked me like he did with everyone. Anyone that hadn't seen him that came in to see him for the first time as a 15-year-old were just blown away with the skill set and what he'd done and the passion, the drive that he shows at that young age. And for me to see him then and to see him evolve throughout the years for the next 4 years and playing with our pro team last year and doing what he did against men in a league that has Stanley Cup champions in it was unbelievable. And I still remember the first time Steve Yzerman came to watch one of our games in Detroit. I sat there for a period with him and talked with him between periods after he'd watched Tim. And they'd obviously been keeping an eye on Mort Seider, who was drafted by Detroit last year, 6th overall. And so he'd known that our program was able to pump out guys. And now he'd come and he'd stumbled on another guy with Tim Stützle. And I was sitting in the stands and I said to him, I go, what do you think? We've got another guy maybe to join Mortitz in Detroit. And he goes, well, I'll tell you what. He goes, and this is before we knew what the lottery was going to be and who was going to get picked and who had the number one, number two. Steve goes, well, I'll tell you what. I played with the Russian five. I might as well create the German five, right? So he was blown away by him as well. But
that's awesome.
Timmy from a young age of 15 and to where he is now, is just it doesn't surprise me whatsoever of where he is now, what he's done, and what he's going to do in the future.
And Brennan, actually, I think the other day or yesterday, you posted it was a short clip of Tim Stützle when he was committed to the University of New Hampshire, and just watching those highlights, I think he was around 16 at that time or so, and he looked really dominant. And I think it was on that Mannheim team. He looked really good. Every play that we saw, it's a 5-minute clip, and you're not missing out on every minute of it. So just goes to show, even last year, he had great plays, and every year it seems like he's just getting better and better. So that's just unbelievable to see.
Yeah. All right. I saw that clip that Brennan put up. It was impressive. That was with the junior Adler program. That's exactly who it was. And he was still learning the game back then. And what I mean learning is understanding positioning and where to be defensively. And making sure that he's not cheating defensively for offensive chances. And as a young guy, at that age, you know, it's all about scoring, right? It's all about the highlight guy. You want to do everything. So he's been learning that, and he's turned into a fabulous pro for us. So yeah, it's been awesome to see him develop to what he is now.
Yeah, you've been just at that age too. It's kind of funny. My view on it, at least, is like this kid, he almost seemed like he had more skill than he knew what to do with. Like, it's like he needed his everything to catch up to, like, his feet and his hands and everything. I feel like still sometimes I feel that way watching him, and it's all just starting to come together the way that he makes these plays that others would seem to be impossible. He makes it look so easy, and he's just, I'm excited to watch him for many years.
Well,
so,
the thing too about Timmy is it's interesting because he's had to play, he's had to play with, you know, let's say if you look at the tournament now, JJ Paterka is an elite player as well. So you see him playing with an elite guy. You can see him make plays, but when he gets on the ice with guys that maybe don't have that same skill set as him, he tries to bring them to that element, to that level. But that's why it's so exciting for me, is when I see Tim, the skill set he has right now. And when he gets into that Ottawa Senators camp and he plays with guys that have the skill set that are similar to his, I think he's going to take his game to a completely different level.
Yeah. And that was my next question. I mean, I was just about to ask you, how good do you think he'll be in the NHL? I mean, we've all seen him. We've seen him play against men. So we're all assuming he's going to step in and be, you know, a dominant player. But just based off your exposure to him and seeing him firsthand, how do you think he'll adapt to the NHL and, you know, its style of play? I'm just curious to know what you think.
Well, it's interesting because I've talked to a lot of people before the draft, during the draft, and before everyone had a chance to see him on the World Juniors with what he could actually do. I mean, the only thing that people were exposed to was past video clips of Timmy and the people not knowing who this kid was. And, you know, I always got asked the comparisons of who I would compare him to. And a lot of my comparisons always came back to guys like Patrick Kane, Mitch Marner. But as you watch him more in the tournaments, in this tournament, you see that he's got a grit element to his game as well. Like he's got a little bit of a nasty side to him. So he's a guy that doesn't take any crap from anybody. And, you know, you look at maybe an Ilya Kovalchuk type guy who he's got the same type of skill, speed, and jam. I mean, maybe that's another comparison that you have, but I'll tell you what, where is he going to be? I predicted that within, you know, 2 to 3 years, this guy's going to be on an NHL All-Star team, and maybe even sooner. He's got the skill set. He's got the passion. And that's one thing that people can't see when you watch a guy play. You don't know what you have behind the scenes, what type of person he is. Timmy Stützle is a, number one, he's a gym rat. He loves the gym. He's the first guy and last guy out of that. He's in the best shape that you'll ever see of a kid that age. He's got a lower half that is the typical European guy with huge legs, huge ass. Gravity. You can't knock him off the puck. And the third is his compete level in games and in practices. Guys in Mannheim would get pissed off at him because he would work too hard in practice and he would show guys up. Well, as a coach, first of all, as a player, especially as an older player over there, I'd be pissed off. I'm like, slow down, you're making me look bad. But as a coach on any team, that's exactly what you want. You want that element of compete, not only in games, but you want them in practices, on and off the ice. And he goes full throttle every single time. And, you know, that's what's going to make him a great pro, is because he has that passion, that compete to go along with that skill set that he's got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. He's on a keto diet, I think I saw, which I don't know too many 19-year-olds that are willing to give up the sugary foods in life. But it kind of, I guess, just goes to show, like, he's just built different. But no, that's awesome. Actually, I do have another question regarding that as well. So kind of even going back to that video that we were talking about when he was on that U15 team. So Tim originally did commit to that UNH program, University of New Hampshire, and elected against going that route, as well as going to the CHL, and decided to go or play for for Mannheim in the DEL and choose to play in the men's league. And I mean, just watching that video that came out after his draft, and even just like it seemed like his family kind of felt like UNH might have been the better move for him. But Tim was very set in, no, I'm going to play with men. This is the route for me. And I mean, I don't think anyone could tell him he made the wrong decision looking at what he's been able to do. So I'm just curious, in your perspective, what does playing in a men's league offer to a younger player? Because that's not a route that we've seen a lot in the past, but it might be one that we're seeing more in the future. Obviously, Austin Matthews chose to play in the Swiss league. And now we're seeing Tim that did it in the DEL, albeit from other options.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the big influences on Tim and why he wanted to stay and play pro was because one of his best buddies is Mordit Seider. So Mordit was the first one to kind of do it last year or 2 years ago when he decided to forego going over to junior. The I believe it was the Owen Sound attack had his rights and they wanted him to come play in the CHL. And then Mordit had to make the decision to go to junior route or does he stay and hopefully, because nothing was given to him, hopefully, make our team and earn a spot to play in the DEL. And Mordit did that. And he started a little bit slower than Tim did in terms of getting quality ice time. But halfway through the season, we knew this guy was special. And next thing you know, he was playing top 4 minutes on the back end. And ultimately, because of how well he played to Detroit, sixth overall. Fast forward a year later, Timmy's got the opportunity. He came over to North America. It was so funny because he came over and we played a bunch of tournaments. We were going to play in St. Andrews College, our U20 team at the St. Andrews McPherson tournament with our junior Adler team. So wow. Timmy came over there and then we played a couple other games against prep schools. And it's so funny because Timmy was originally going to go to Sioux Falls in the USHL that year and then go to UNH the following year. So the Sioux Falls coach was at these games. UNH was at these games. So they were like full board pressure, get him to go, which is fine. That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
But then as the season went on and Timmy saw what Mordit Seider, his best buddy, was doing in Mannheim and seeing that he was getting ice time and he was contributing and being a guy really developing as part of this team. Timmy's like, Jesus, why can't I do that? And obviously we were excited because we thought that he could play as well. And we wanted to give him every chance to make our team and make it better. He decided to come play with us. And he ultimately made that decision to forego the college route and the junior and the USHL route and ultimately stayed with us. And thank goodness for us, we're so happy he did. But we started him off a little bit slower. He was a natural centerman to begin with. We put him on the right wing. And to answer your question, my long-winded answer to your short question was we put him on a line with Ben Smith, who had won a Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks, and another guy named Tommy Huhtala, who's a Finnish. Basically, he's another Leo Komarov for our league. That's what it is, that type of player. And we had these guys play with Timmy. And I'd like to say that these guys helped elevate Tim's game. But the truth is, Timmy elevated these guys' games, and they both had career years for us. We ran our power play. I think our power play last year was running at 35%. I mean, it was like almost 10% higher than anybody in the league. And it was because of Tim Stützle. Timmy was our quarterback on that power play. So he was playing with men. He was being creative and just making everyone better around him. So, at the beginning of the year, we didn't know what he was going to do. It took about 2 weeks to realize for us that this guy's a superstar in our league already. So the fact that he was able to play with men and play against that heavier body and the competition going into corners with guys that are 28, 29 years old, that are 6'5", 235-pound defensemen, and be able to get acclimatized to that type of body contact and that physicality in that league, you can't measure it. That was a great experience for him and a great learning to understand if you want to compete at the highest level, you've got to learn how to battle physically against guys that are much bigger and stronger than you. And he did a great job with that. And, after Tim got drafted, I'll tell you this, he weighed like 185 pounds when he got drafted. The COVID time and everything got pushed back. Timmy weighs about 202 pounds right now of solid muscle. So this guy took the time to develop his body to get it stronger. And so the transition now to go to the NHL isn't going to be that jump like it is from a junior kid to go up, because Tim's already physically played against men for a whole year. So where's your advantage? That's your advantage. It was massive that he got a chance to play against guys like that. And not just survive, thrive in that environment. It was awesome.
Yeah. It definitely was. And I think, you know, we sort of don't get to compare these guys so much often when, because a lot of our prospects, they don't play against men, or a lot of them, you know, they haven't had that aspect of their game developed. And I think sometimes it affects a lot of guys because they can't translate to the NHL as well. But just to see that he was able to be such a dominant presence on that power play, playing against men and still not being shy of bringing out his physical game, just it throws a lot of promise, I think, for a lot of Sens fans when we notice that in the clips. I think, you know, we see him live against people his own age and we just realize he's a step above and he doesn't belong there. So, you know, just going on to my next question. Given that you're the director of North American scouting for Adler, how much thought do you give to the European ice surface when it comes to evaluating a player here in North America? Is that something you think about while scouting players? Is that important to you?
Yeah, obviously there's more ice, there's more space over in Europe to skate, but it's essentially the same thing. If you can skate, you can skate. If you can stick handle, you can stick handle. The biggest thing I look at is that compete level. I mean, if you're a playmaking guy that can that absolutely flies over here in North America, the bigger ice is only going to help you that much more. But what we really want to see is we want to see that as well. It's like when you get into the small areas, how can he does he battle hard? Is he able to win those one-on-one battles? So if you can skate over North America, you're going to do much better because you'll have a little bit more time to be creative on the big ice. But at the end of the day, you know, show me your compete, show me that you want the puck more than the other guy. That's going to carry probably a little bit more weight than anything else.
Cool. Yeah, it makes sense. I think you see a lot of guys go play in Europe and it's a totally different player almost, you know, it depends who you look at, but it gives people an advantage, I think, just to use their speed a bit more. So it'll be cool to see Timmy. I mean, we've seen him in the North American ice here in the World Juniors and he's able to be a very complete, very dominant player. So I'm very excited to see him long-term here in Ottawa. And
so I guess touching on that,
what's interesting about it too is when you look at a guy of Timmy's. Sorry, I was gonna touch up on that. Just say that when Timmy's skating with what he does, with what everyone has seen, how fast he is on the big ice surface. He was so dominant because he had a little bit more time and he can get more speed. But I also see the smaller ice surface as an advantage for Tim because of his explosiveness and how quickly he'll get into scoring areas and create scoring opportunities for him because of that first, second step. And now you're not as far away from the net as you were in the bigger ice surface. If you're on the hash marks in the half wall, you have to maybe take two or three strides to get into a scoring spot. As in North American ice, it's one quick stride and you're already there. So that's going to be an advantage for Tim for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's actually what I was going to ask is if you like, I felt like watching the World Juniors, it was almost like, okay, well now the puck's just always on a stick because he's just that much closer to it. Right. Like it's just, he's just that much more involved in the play all the time. And I mean, like his agility and just the way that he's able to turn corners and like pivot on a dime like that. I just feel like it's just, I feel like it's going to be an adjustment, but it'll be an adjustment that when he makes it, it might even enhance his game in some ways.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. The smaller ice surface isn't going to affect him. I mean, if you've got the skill set that you have, you know, a lot of time is, you know, how do you help or how do you manage a guy? How does everyone take care of Sidney Crosby? How do you defend against the Patrick Kane? It's take time and space away from them. Okay, you can do that, but at the end of the day, they're still going to make plays because they're that skilled. That's going to be the same thing with Tim. Everyone's going to say, well, we'll take more time and space away from him. That's awesome. Good luck. Because he's still got that skill set. He's going to be able to make plays whether you take time and space away from him. So that's what makes him a little bit more different than other young pros. Someone may get a little bit rattled when ice is being closed off on him. Tim figures out how to be more creative with less time and space. And next thing you know, he's making passes to teammates that you're like, how did that just happen? So yeah. He's got that wow factor to his game, and I think that's definitely going to be brought to the Ottawa Senators for sure.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Yeah, that's just it. I feel like he just processes the game at that kind of level, right? That he's just able to adjust to it so quickly, and it's been a treat to watch. Another treat to watch has been this Florian Eliáš kid. He's been generating a lot of hype, especially this last game. I think that he played absolutely outstanding in the whole tournament, but today especially in the quarterfinals. So I guess since he is a part of your system and he went undrafted last year, what parts of his game do you think that if he like continues to work on, he might have a chance of getting drafted in 2021?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I think a lot of the reasons why you didn't see him get drafted is, you know, he was overshadowed by Tim, and that was what everyone came to see. And Tim got the spotlight from everybody. But Florian, I mean, he's been another guy that's been in our program for a number of years. He's basically played him the whole way up as well. And he also has another younger brother that's kind of built the same way and has the same skill set that's on our U20 team right now. But Florian's a small guy. He's a small guy, a low center of gravity. But what you don't know about him, you may have seen it a couple times in the tournament, the kid's a little fire hydrant. There was some big Russian players or some big USA players that thought that they could take a run at him, knock him down, and then he would give them the old reverse shoulder Peter Forsberg, and some big four guy was on his ass, and Florian's just standing over top of him. The guys are looking like, what did I just run into? So he's built like a tank, and he's more quick than fast. And what I mean by that is, I mean, when he gets his speed going, he's fine, but it takes maybe a little bit to get to the top speed, but east west skating and being elusive with the puck, he's really good at that. And what you saw in the World Juniors here is you saw a kid that has a high hockey IQ and understands where to be for offensive chances, and also understands how to play with skilled players. He was definitely, it was an advantage for him to play with Tim and John, JJ, but also on the flip side, Timmy and John were pretty lucky to have a guy of the hockey IQ and pedigree of Florian Eliáš to be able to dish them when they're open and find these guys. So as much as those guys were you know, superstars in the tournament, Florian just stepped out of their shadow a little bit this tournament and said, hey, take a look at me. I may be someone that someone could use down the road. So, you know, he's not a big guy, but, I mean, we'll see. He's definitely going to be a good pro, whether he stays in Europe or if he gets a chance over in North America. Who knows? But this was definitely his coming out party in the World Juniors this year.
Yeah. For good reasons as well. I mean, you look at him play and he looks like a very prominent, you know, young prospect on the ice. And I don't think a lot of people knew who he was before the tournament. I know I didn't have an idea of who Eliáš was, but I sort of figured at first it was because he was playing with JJ, he was playing with Timmy, he's going to obviously do well. But the more I looked at him, I mean, he was very good on the puck on his own, and he was very responsible with the puck as well. And he did stand out in his own sense. And I'm super excited to keep a tab on him, because as a Sens fan, to know that this guy went undrafted last draft, and to see that, you know, we might have missed out on JJ Paterka, I really hope the Sens at least, you know, get Florian just to have that chemistry with Timmy and that German connection that we did miss out on this draft. But I'd love to see Florian in a Sens jersey.
Yeah, no, it'll be a bit of a long shot. I mean, sometimes you got to look at the tournaments and see what happens. Florian's good. He's got a long ways to go. He's nowhere near the readiness of a Timmy Stützle. But what Florian does bring to the game is he brings, like for a small centerman, the fact that he can be heavy on the puck and win puck battles is impressive. So he's got some time to develop. It'll be interesting to see if he decides to want to come over and maybe toil in the CHL next year. We're going to definitely encourage him to stay with us again, because we see a future for him with our organization. But by all means, we always want to help guys get to that level, the highest they can get to. And that's why we're so happy for Timmy Stützle to get to the NHL to reach his dream. And whatever floor and whatever the ceiling is for him, we're going to help him get there as well.
Awesome. And I just want to ask one last question from my part. This is sort of something I'm just interested in knowing, but what are your main categories that you assess while evaluating a player's game? You know, is there any certain aspects of a player's game that you value more than others, like work ethic or whatnot? You know, does that come into play for your players that find themselves on Manheim?
Yeah, no, we've got a pretty cool, you know, I've got a general manager who's a very knowledgeable individual. His name was Axel Olivera, and he was actually the Buffalo Sabres scout for 3 years before he became our GM, and so he brings a lot of his scouting professionalism into ours, and you know, he oversees a lot of stuff that we talk about, and he came up with a pretty good template of how we do things. I mean, everyone has their own idea of what they think is a good player and what makes them a good or a bad player. But you also have categories that you look at when you're scouting. So when I go to a game, you know, I'm obviously looking at how the player has played in that particular game. But then you have subdivisions that you look down, and you definitely look at their skating ability of what they can do as a skater. And that means his agility, his quickness with and without the puck, his explosiveness, separation speed, escapability, all those things, balance and power. And then, you know, you move down and you look at the other things. What is his offensive skill like? What's his offensive hockey sense like? And that's things like decision making with the puck, how you generate offense with the puck. Are you patient with it, or do you get rushed when you have time and space taken away from you? Then you move down and you discuss and you look at their defensive hockey sense. And you know, that is like, are they taking away skating, shooting lanes, passing lanes? How's your defensive body position? Do you control the opposition stick and foremost and just take away chances that way? Those are all important, but then come to the real important ones. And the one I've already talked about with you guys is your compete level. I mean, you know, your compete level is huge. It doesn't matter where you're playing. Is there any hesitation in your game? Are you afraid to go to certain areas? Are you afraid of getting in front of shots and blocking shots? Are you going to win one-on-one battles? That's a big compete thing that you want to see out of a player. And if he has any flaws in that game, you're kind of like, you kind of shy away. But if he checks all those boxes off, that guy becomes even more attractive for your team. And go down, you look at his puck skills, obviously. What does he do well with the puck? Is he a playmaker? Is he a passer? And, you know, does he possess an NHL shot? Does he need work on that? Does he get it away quickly? And then the final one, probably the most important for us, because there's a lot of players that when they do come to Europe are kind of knock off a lot of boxes, is the character. And that's one thing where I like to always talk about Timmy Stützle with Ottawa. You know, what type of person is this guy away from the rink? Do the fans like, or do the coaches like him? Do the teammates like him? Does he have any off-issue problems? Does he go to the bar too much? Does he eat fast food too much? Like, does he get on with trainers? Things like that. A lot of times there's a lot of guys that are very similar in the skill set, their ability to play on the ice. But if you bring a negative energy to the dressing room and you're a bad character guy, well, we don't want you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I really like that. I like that is an emphasis. You can have all the skill in the world, right? And that's kind of what I've taken away from Tim's game, is that it some nights it really does appear that he does have all the skill in the world. But just like you said, like, to what, put on an extra 15 pounds from getting drafted until now, and just his work ethic. There's not many skilled guys that are lying down to block a shot with a minute left in a close game like Tim did the other night. And just things like that. I just feel like his compete level, his character, things like that. Really stoked to see about that. But I think it's cool to kind of look at that with every player and understand the value in that. Because really, you're only as good as how hard you work, is something that I've kind of taken as a life philosophy. And it's cool how that also matters in hockey.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if DJ Smith wants him blocking shots and getting a mile-hour shot. I think he'll leave that to some of the other guys, but it is nice to know that he has that in his game. He, like I said, he's got that grit to his game too. So, so that can also sometimes be a hindrance because sometimes he doesn't realize how big some guys are and it doesn't matter. He goes in after him, which is a positive, but you want your highly skilled sniper to stay healthy as well.
Yeah.
So before we send you off, this is actually just a question for me, I think. You know, me and Brennan, we, like we said, we did do some research on you, and we found a nice little clip here. It says Mark Messier versus Todd Plushko. So just talk us through that. And, you know, I mean, if, was there any honors, you know, fighting one of the greatest? And, you know, what was your thought process going into that fight?
Oh, you broke up a little bit, but I think you're talking about Mark Messier.
That is, that's precisely it. Yeah, so we did some digging on the internet, and we came up with the Lushko Messier fight, and was just wondering what sparked that. It looked like there was a hit on the play, and then and what that was like. Looking marked.
That in, video isn't flattering for me because sorry. What happened with the fight was this, is we were penalty killing, and I was on it was a 5-on-4, it was near the end of the game, and I was going into the boards with Brian Leach, and Brian Leach went to poke check the puck. I thought he was going to hit me, so I put my elbow up to protect the game. So the start of the next period, I'm facing off against Mark Messier at center ice. I win the draw with ease. I'm like, how did I just win that draw so easily? And then I realized that he let me win that draw. And then he proceeded to follow me around and give me the old water ski hook from behind. I turned around and he says, all right, kid, it's time to pay the fiddler. You can't do that to a Hall of Famer. So I said, all right. So we dropped the gloves. And unfortunately, fortunately for me, I slipped and fell down. So I didn't have to feel his pure strength. But the funny part about it was at the end of the game, it was a TSN game. So it was broadcast back home. All for talking back and forth. And Mark was said to me, he goes, hey, do you understand why I had to do that? You know that that's not the way I play. I didn't mean to do that. And he goes, I know you didn't mean it, but I just had to do that. After the game, when I got my phone, checking my text messages, all my buddies from back home who watched the game ended up saying, hey, the next, because they couldn't hear me. They couldn't hear what was going on in the box. They just saw me and Mark talking back and forth. And all my buddies that text me go, hey, next time the Moose gives you a tongue lashing, shut up and take it. Don't say nothing back. Have some respect.
That's a great story. I love that.
Oh, that was fantastic. Oh man, that's hey, I mean, not many people can say that they've shared that pleasure, even if you fall down to the ice. But hey, you beat Mark Messier in the faceoff circle. That's something to be proud of.
Yeah, that was a good one. It happened every once in a while, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, Todd. Well, I just wanted to personally say thank you so much for coming on to the show today. Just an absolute pleasure talking to you, and just your pedigree and your experience, everything that you've gotten to do, all the experiences that you have. I don't know if I have anything that I can teach you. It seems like I didn't even know who the team the Harlem Globetrotters played were, but it was an absolute pleasure getting to pick your brain, hearing your stories, and wish you all the best in 2021.
Thanks, boys. Keep pumping out good podcasts. I'm going to be looking forward to listening to you guys, and we'll make sure we start sending these out so you guys end up being as big as some of those other guys. You guys are doing a good job, and I love seeing young guys getting involved in doing this stuff. Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you, Todd. Means a lot.